Welcome to Sweetland Center for Writing podcast series, Topics in Writing. I'm T. Hetzel, and today I'll be speaking with Ellen Carrillo of the University of Connecticut. We'll be talking about integrating attention to reading across the disciplines. First, a brief bio. Ellen Carrillo is associate professor and a writing coordinator in the Department of English, University of Connecticut. She is the author of many articles and books, including most recently, Reading Critically, Writing Well, 12th edition, the MLA Guide to Digital Literacy, Teaching Readers in Post-Truth America, A Writer's Guide to Mindful Reading, and Securing a Place for Reading and Composition, The Importance of Teaching for Transfer. Ellen, thanks so much for talking.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with your books.
Sure.
The path, because as I mentioned, as I just noted in the bio, Reading Critically, Writing Well, the 12th edition, Teaching Readers in Post-Truth America, and a Writer's Guide to Mindful Reading. What was your path to this area of scholarship?
So usually my scholarship starts out with a theoretical text. So I'm thinking about questions about reading and how students seem to really be struggling with reading in their writing courses. A lot of instructors, I think, believe that students have a lot of writing problems and need help with their writing. But my time as a teacher and the research that I've done has suggested that students are struggling with reading, and that, in fact, what we usually think of as, you know, writing problems are actually struggles that students are having with reading. And so I really wanted to study that, to think about students' reading practices, to think about the history of the field of composition, and when reading was prominent in it, which was in the early years, how reading really fell away and how scholars weren't focusing on reading for a while in the field of composition, even though reading is so connected, so closely connected to writing. I did a lot of that theoretical work in my earlier publications. But then I really wanted to start developing resources for instructors and for students. And that's when I used that theory and that research to develop a lot of the student-facing textbooks and the handbooks that I've developed over the last few years.
And Ellen, let's talk about moving it into the writing classroom. Because reading the articles, engaging sources through reading-writing connections across the disciplines, for example, it was interesting to me to see how I also, as a writing instructor, was in some ways taking reading for granted in the classroom. I would use texts to deconstruct them and to talk about choices that you're making as a writer, and always talking about how writing is thinking. But this made me remember that reading is thinking too.
Right. So I think the term that I like to use when I talk about writing generally is composition, because I think when we're writing, we're composing meaning. But when we're reading, we're composing meaning too. And so for me, that's why those must always go hand in hand. And while we're so used to focus on writing as a composition practice, we have writing across the curriculum programs, writing in the disciplines programs, we really don't pay attention to reading as an equally important composition practice. And so when I do talk to instructors from across the disciplines, I try to contextualize my argument for attending to reading within these writing across the curriculum programs, that we need to attend to reading across the disciplines as well.
What are some ways that we can then attend to reading?
So
in the writing classroom.
Sure. So I ask instructors to think not only about how, say, historians or biologists write, but also how they read. And I want them to think about the strategies that they use as they read, professional journals and so forth. And I want them to think about how they can teach their students not just the writing practices that would allow students to enter that discipline, but also the reading practices. When a biologist is reading something, what are they looking for? When a historian is reading something, what are they doing? And so, and even physicists and so forth. And so I try to get instructors to think about the reading practices that are most useful in their discipline and think of ways to share those with students. And I do have specific strategies. I talk to instructors about rhetorical reading, where students can pay attention to the piece's audience, its purpose, the claims a writer is making, even the appeals a writer might be making to ethos or pathos and so forth. And so rhetorical reading is one strategy that's really useful across all disciplines. Another strategy that instructors and students, I think, too, have also found useful is something called the says-does approach, where you go paragraph by paragraph, marking next to each paragraph what the paragraph is doing and what it's saying. So both the content and the rhetorical function. And that can be really helpful as students are trying both, I think, to read really dense textbooks and textbook chapters, but also really dense peer-reviewed articles. Maybe the content is really difficult to understand, but if they can get the organizational structure by paying attention to what each paragraph is doing, then they're sort of on their way to understanding the piece as a whole. So I have a whole sort of toolkit of strategies that I share with instructors for them to then share with students. So students have a lot of strategies when they're reading. I think something we don't necessarily think about is that students are often reading in all of their classes, and they need different strategies depending on the class. And so the more strategies we can give them, whether that's in a first-year writing course or in the specific disciplinary courses, I think the more prepared they are to move from course to course, but then also to move out in the world and try to parse all of the information that is coming to them on a daily basis through social media and any number of other media outlets.
So Ellen, would that mean when you refer to this like beyond the classroom, would you be recommending the idea of the expansive frame pedagogy? And can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
Would that be especially useful in first year writing as well as upper level writing?
Sure. So I always talk to instructors about the importance of teaching for transfer. And that involves teaching in these expansive contexts where instructors are consistently making connections and helping students make connections between the work of their course and future courses, but also their lives outside of the academy. And so I introduced in my scholarship something that I call the mindful reading framework. And that's this expansive metacognitive frame where students aren't only learning these different strategies, but they're engaged in many opportunities to reflect on them. And so they're reflecting on their uses in specific circumstances. They're anticipating future uses of them, whether that might be in other classes or outside of school, maybe at a job or in their daily lives. And I even have them look back also, perhaps to some high school work where they think this might have been useful. And so I give them opportunities in reading journals and other kinds of assignments, not just to practice the strategies, but to reflect on their uses. And so students learn not just how to use the strategies, but they learn about themselves as readers. They learn about the uses of these different strategies. And so they become more mindful as they move along, both within the academy, but outside of it as well.
And you see it happening in your research.
I do. I've just started a longitudinal study. I'm in the early stages of that. But I did have students complete a survey, and I'm now interviewing several case studies following students through at least 5 semesters, hopefully more, to see how this mindful reading framework is affecting them beyond the first year writing course. And I'm excited. It's a cross-institutional study. And so we have state schools represented, we have community colleges represented, and we have private institutions represented as well. And so while I won't necessarily have all the data for a long time, since it is that kind of study, I am beginning to see that students are using these beyond that first year course.
So what could first-year writing instructors do to encourage the mindful reading? Like, would it be the instructors would be using an expansive pedagogy framework, and then the students would be, in order to teach students to have the mindful reading? Could you give us, like, is there a toolkit for that?
Sure. So I think it's likely a series of assignments that I would talk to first year writing instructors about. I ask students in first year writing and in other courses as well to keep a consistent reading journal. And so rather than personal reading responses, students have a set of questions that are metacognitive in nature that they're responding to. And those are sorts of questions about the different reading approaches that they're trying out. And they're reflecting upon how far a specific reading approach took them. And they're thinking about what reading approach they might have needed to bring in sort of halfway through the reading because that first one failed them. And then they're looking forward and thinking about where else they might use this. And so I have a list of about 10 questions or so that shift students' attention from the specific reading assignments that they're doing to these more metacognitive, generalized questions about reading itself. And so the idea is that they're constructing knowledge about the reading practices, but about themselves as readers as well. And so they're bringing that knowledge with them into other contexts and courses as well. And so I would say out of all of the assignments, the reading journal specifically gets at these issues and allows students to begin constructing this knowledge about reading and about themselves as readers.
And it seems like it makes all the difference in the world to actually be aware and recognize that you're a reader. Like there's the work of that as well as the work and you and realizing you are a writer.
Right, right. And so I think that, you know, as I said, a lot of instructors don't necessarily think about reading. They sort of take it for granted, as do students. Students think that they learn how to read in first or second grade, and then sort of it's over. And so I think the reading journal reminds them that there are different ways of reading, that there are different purposes for reading, and that the different ways lend themselves to specific purposes, right? And so if an instructor assigns a summary, for example, the student's going to want to read in a very specific way in order to produce that summary, in order to write that summary. But if an instructor assigns, say, a comparative piece, and the student needs to read one piece to compare it to another, that student's going to read in a very specific way again in order to be able to compare two pieces. And so drawing students' attention to that, that there are different ways of reading and that different ways serve different purposes is really important as they then move to their writing assignments. Because in these writing courses, in order for students to succeed, they will often need to read something and they'll need to read it in a specific way depending on the assignment. And so instructors need, I think, to be transparent about that and give students the strategies that they need. And then students need to develop this awareness of the different approaches to reading and which lend themselves to which specific writing assignments.
And so in the reading journal, Ellen, you mentioned that a student, for example, might be writing about their reflecting on how one of their approaches to reading a certain assignment or piece failed, so they had to switch the approach. How as a writing instructor would you be helping the student to learn these series of approaches so they have this in their toolbox?
So when I teach a writing course, I actually front load it with all this reading. And I teach all of these reading strategies. And students come into the class, even a research writing course that I teach, and I say to them from the start, I say, I know this is a writing course and we will get to the writing, but first we're going to focus on reading. And so I spend the first few weeks of class introducing about 8 or 10 approaches. And I give students opportunities to practice all of the approaches. And then what I'm also asking students to do as we're doing this is annotate their text either digitally or by hand. So that first of all, they're becoming aware of these approaches, they can see the approaches, and because these writing classes are small, I can also look at students' annotations and I can see what their reading looks like. And that's something that I haven't mentioned yet. And that is one of the difficulties of teaching reading is that reading's invisible, right? So in a writing course, we're all very accustomed to students working in peer groups. They share their writing. They'll turn their writing into us. We can give them feedback on it. Their peers can give them feedback on it. But we can't do that as easily with reading unless we really come up with a way to foreground it. And the way that I do that is through the active annotation. And so when students are applying the says-does approach or they're rhetorically reading something or applying any of these other ways of reading that I introduce, they're annotating in that way. And so they can see their reading, I can see their reading, their peers can see their reading, and we can all sort of work together on their reading in a way that if you don't find a way to make reading visible, you just simply can't work on it.
So when you're teaching annotating, because that's something you need to teach too, you can't just say it. Kind of, for us, you could say, have a conversation with a text or whatever. Right. So do you give them guidance in that you would say, question the text or how are you responding? Could you talk a little bit about the guiding best practices you teach for annotation?
Sure. So the way I start out is by talking to students about these different reading strategies, and I show them what it might look to annotate a text according to them. So with the says does approach, for example, next to each paragraph, the student would write the word says, and they would put the content, they would sort of summarize the content, and does, they would put the rhetorical function. Is it introducing an idea? Is it providing background information? These sorts of things. And so that's the kind of annotation that would go along with that. You know, when students are rhetorically reading, they're looking for a main argument, they might underline it or circle it. I do try to be very flexible in terms of the specific marks that students are making on the page. I certainly guide them and I give them ways to do it and I introduce them to all of these different strategies. But after a while, I let them really decide what works best for them as readers.
Develop their own reading practice.
Exactly, exactly. And develop that in the course, and hopefully it's something they can take with them elsewhere. And so that they feel like they have these strategies, these annotation strategies, for frankly reading anything that they come across in that class or beyond.
This might be a good time to talk about digital literacy in the writing classroom.
Sure.
And its increasing importance.
Yeah, so I think something that surprises a lot of us is that even though many or most of our students are you know, so-called digital natives, research shows that they don't necessarily have digital-specific reading strategies and that they need these and that we need to teach these. And so, for example, recent research has shown that students aren't reading digital texts, and that could be an online text or a source that they're reading for a research assignment or something. They're not reading those texts any differently than they're reading print texts. So they're not necessarily clicking on hyperlinks. They're not opening new tabs to go into depth about a subject or something like that. And so this, I think, is surprising. I think we assume that students are doing this, but generally the research is showing that they're not. And so we need to talk to them about how this works and really how to capitalize on the World Wide Web and all of those connections and all of those networks and use you know, the hyperlinks and so forth and the new tabs to really go into depth and be able to read something in more depth than you could with a print source. You know, these are really valuable resources, but it doesn't seem as though students are using them. And so I think we need to focus in our classes on how to read something on a digital platform.
Especially to evaluate it as a source many times.
Yes. So something that's interesting, and I've done this myself for many years, although I'm beginning to shift my ways, I think for years we've used a lot of checklists for students to assess the credibility of sources. Is it, you know, is the author credible? Is it on a .org rather than a .com domain? What are there citations in it and so forth? We'll ask students if it's reasonable or accurate or what else has the author written. But recent research has shown that tethering students to the source might not be the most efficient or effective way to assess a source's credibility. And Sam Weinberg and Sarah McGrew, who were at the University of Stanford, did a study that showed that actually reading laterally or across the web in order to assess a single source's credibility can be a much more efficient and effective way of assessing credibility. And so rather than staying tethered to the single source and asking these sorts of checklist questions, we can go to other sources about that source and other sources about that author, and we can really use the web to create some context and a better understanding of a source's credibility than we can by simply focusing on the single source itself. And this makes sense in a lot of ways, because now you can really make, with all of the software that's out there and everything, anybody can make a source or a site look credible. There was a time when we could look for typos and things like that, or a site would just look odd and you knew it wasn't credible. And that's not the case anymore. Now it's very easy to make a website that looks credible. And so their point is that just focusing on the site or the web page itself is no longer sufficient. We need to look elsewhere on the web. And so they've introduced this idea of lateral reading, and something that I've started to teach in my own courses.
And it seems like this digital literacy is especially important as we think about students like engaging with media in their lives, as you were mentioning earlier, Ellen, and also looking to being informed and engaged citizens that are able to evaluate sources.
Right.
One of your books speaks to this directly.
Yes, yes. And so the stakes for this, I think, are so much higher, frankly, than the classroom. I mean, I think we want students to do well in our courses and to graduate and so forth. But in some ways, democracy is really at stake here. And students, in order to be informed citizens in a democracy, they need to be able to parse information. They need to be able to assess it. They need to be able to understand the differences between misinformation and disinformation. And they need this not just for their work in the classroom, but to really participate and to be informed citizens. And so, as we teach students about this, I do think it's important to make connections to what's going on outside of the classroom and what it means to be a participant in a democracy.
Thanks, Ellen. Thanks so much for talking today.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Sweetland podcast series, Topics in Writing, recorded at the University of Michigan. For more information about the Sweetland Center for Writing, visit us on the web at lsa.umich.edu/Sweetland.